Father Timothy.
Yes, Father Timothy.
Is there in the prophetic gift the identification in some, as a testifying person of truth, speaking truth to power, speaking of righteousness, because prophetic is not just only, as I understand it, what predicts, but having had godly knowledge about what are consequences to disobeying God's laws and commands. So then help me, Father, in knowing how there is some way of the prophetic gift.
Okay, good, great question. That hits the nail on the head. Of course, yes. You know, prophets, one of the prophetic gifts is being able to speak truth to power and to do with a conviction and a clarity and a force that we associate with prophets. So are you saying that that's not a possible thing, that that can happen? I would say it is a possible thing, it can happen. But what is the marker when you're reading the prophet's books? What's the first thing that makes you know this is a prophet? What is the lead-in to the prophecy? Thus saith the Lord. That's the mark of true prophecy. Now, I would say if someone knows that they are speaking the words of the Lord, thus saith the Lord, I'm just a channel for this, I would say then it's possible. But my question is, how do you know? How many of us, I have never come to any kind of conviction in my life, no matter how emotionally I held to it, where I could stand up and say, thus saith the Lord, and then give my words, all right? That's where my question comes in. I think that's where St. John Cassian's question comes in. And maybe even Father Stephen's, I mean, I'm curious to hear what you think about him. How do you know that those words which you're uttering prophetically is really from the Lord? And even in history, the people that we honor as prophets, in a way, were vindicated after the fact, all right? Even when they were uttering those words prophetically, they threw them down wells, you know? They did all kinds of things to prophets. They didn't accept them for what they said. And then history vindicates those prophecies, but it's an after the fact kind of vindication. So can you have, I guess the question that comes up from your question is, can you have certain contemporaneous vindication, validation that your words are really words of prophecy from God? I don't know, but I don't know about doing it. Yes, Father. Yeah. Yes, Ephesians 4:26. Father, if you want to go to the mic, it'll help.
He says in Ephesians 4:26, be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. So anger and wrath, both of them. And neither give place to the devil.
Yes. And see, we talked about this passage of anger but sin not. And the thing is, he says, be angry. We're human beings. We're going to be angry, right? There's not one of us who doesn't experience anger. The anger itself is not the sin, but what we do with it. So anger rising naturally within you might be a testimony to our fallen nature, but it's natural. We're all subject to that nature, and we all are angry. But when it's sin not, then what do we do with that anger? And that's the question. And did I mention it? Do not let the sun go down on your anger, my experience with that. So I think anger is a natural part of humanity. It's not going to go away. But the question is, do we express it openly? Do we let one of these offspring of anger come out from us because we're so sure this is the word of God? Or do we not? And if we are speaking, isn't it interesting that the only unpardonable sin is a sin against the Holy Spirit? And that's what is attributing words to God that are not God's. That's a sin against the Spirit. And that's what giving way to the devil is, I think, to some extent. Yes?
Usually when we talk about anger, and we have the right to be angry when something is wrong. And when we get angry, we can make some changes in a positive way. And this, we know it in our life. However, anger is like fire. If you use it in a moderate way, you can cook and you can have a good steak. But if you use it unmoderately, it will burn the house.
Yes. So. And see, that's the point, isn't it? Do we often know when it is that we're using the anger immoderately? Or do we assume that we're using it moderately when really we're not? This is where the gray area is. I'm not saying that anger, let me tell you, the philosopher said that, where does anger come from? It comes from when we witness something unjust being done to someone we love, or even someone we don't even know but care about. Then anger seems a noble reaction. I'm not questioning that. That's the incensive power. That can be a good thing. But then once it becomes anger and you express it, that's the question. Things can change with anger. Remember, I gave the example of Jehu this morning. He was doing the Lord's command. It did change things. Israel's history changed when all the descendants of Ahab and Jezebel were gone. But it unleashed all kinds of other problems. So this is, I don't have a quick and easy answer to this, but I'm saying, is it better to reserve expression of anger than to express it without knowing what the consequences will be and then have worse problems develop? Father Josiah.
Father Ted, would you explain if there is a good use of anger against oneself?
That is a good question, and we are going to see that in the talks tomorrow, okay? Because St. John Cassian says, the only valid articulation and expression of anger is against the self. He says that. But that's a problem I'm going to point out, because all of you know enough, you know, psychology 101 to know that if you direct hostility toward yourself, that ends up in becoming depression. St. Paisius gets us out of this bind, I found. So I will talk about this tomorrow. You're right on the mark there. That brings out the question. Even St. John Cassian, who takes these very negative views toward anger, says the only valid form of anger is the anger directed against the evil in oneself. So yes, I would say that is, speaking in person, Cassiani, I would say that's what he would say. Yes, Father John.
Yes, Father John from St. Anthony's in San Diego. I just wanted to share, and maybe the brothers have already seen this, it was just an interesting film that we watched in camp. It was called I Am, by the director Tom Shattuck. I don't know if I'm saying it right. He was one of the early directors for Jim Carrey in some of the crazy, zany comedies that started off with. He ended up having a serious accident while he was riding a bike, and his life fell to pieces, and lost his ability, his marriage, lost his, of course, income. And in some of the difficulty that he had, he finally turned in on himself to try to find some reason. I think his family, I believe, may be Roman Catholic, so he started looking for faith again. And one of the things he illustrated in the film, which was something I'd never seen before, had no idea, but in terms of kind of giving maybe scientific proof to what, you know, Elder Porphyrius had said, that quote that you said, and I'm really glad to have that, thank you for sharing that, was that he had some people take a cup of yogurt that was next to him and wire it up with some electrodes. You know, the yogurt has living bacteria, and then they were questioning him. They were interviewing him. But when he got to the real sore spots in his life, when he talked about his lawyer, when he talked about his agent, which he had incredible animosity to, the yogurt went crazy. They could measure the yogurt. His anger had an impact on another life form that was there. And apparently what I found out is this is something that can be easily done and measured. So, I mean, there is something that's beyond us. We've always known as orthodox, and science is coming up upon some of these things, and that's why what we do with ourselves within, the healing that we do within, has a cosmic impact and importance that we're way beyond from what we even imagined. So I thank you for sharing that with me.
So that's a really powerful example. So what they did, let me see if I understand this, Father John. They hooked him up to an electrode and put the other end of the electrode in the yogurt. Was that it?
No, they measured the yogurt itself. There was no connection to him.
So the anger, the whatever it was that was in him, that negative impact had an effect.
They were picking up something in the yogurt.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Father Mark.
Yes, this is very good and familiar to me, and I have taught it at times in the parish, but then I have been chastised by a handful because there is another source of anger that when I would present this kind of thing, people would come to me and say, but you're missing something. And so I would listen, and that's the only reason I'm standing here, so I can pass on what they said I was missing. And that is the kind of anger that comes from people who've been hurt in their childhood, and they've been wounded, and that anger that they had as a child, they carry into their adult life, and it doesn't seem like it's directly the source of pride or vainglory or conceit, but they've been wounded, and then as adults they come and they perceive threats from people as threats to their very existence, and that anger comes from them, and they've told me this model that I'm familiar with also doesn't fit them, and yet they do have anger, and it's very deeply felt and very strongly expressed, and I wonder if how do you connect that kind of...
Well, that's a great question, and I have to say, anyone who's done counseling has encountered this numerous times, right? People who have been imprinted negatively, marked by something that was done to them and which causes them to react in anger, sometimes totally inappropriately with other people because of that imprint that's been left on them. This to me is an example. I don't want to say this is exactly a remembrance of wrong, but it is the imprint of wrongs done to them that has not been removed. And because it hasn't been removed, and how do you remove that? You remove it through things like therapy, counseling, communal support. It's a process. It's a therapeutic process by which that remembrance, I'm not talking about just a recollection, I'm talking about an imprint that left on them that's causing them to react in anger, that has to be dealt with somehow. If not, it just is going to generate anger that I think most of us will say, we understand where it's coming from. But it usually has an effect on other people and actually a negative effect on the person who's expressing it. So it only exaggerates the problem in them, deepens the imprint, and causes anger to be imprinted on others. So I would say that, believe me, I've done enough counseling over the years to know that you never, never minimize the anger or the injury that some people have experienced in their past. And anger is a very natural and predictable reaction to this. But that's not to justify the anger, that's to condemn the cause. And the cause has to be addressed, and really, this is why, I'll tell you too much, I don't know whether you've brothers have felt this, but sometimes I feel I am really overburdened with the need to do counseling that I don't have the time or the ability to do. And I always tell, you know, young clergy, make sure you have people you can trust in the community to whom you can refer people, because you can't say, because I don't have the time or the ability to do it, it shouldn't be dealt with. It should be dealt with. Because it's a continuing factory of anger in the life of that person. That didn't make me angry at all. But I mean, that sort of thing is what I think we need to do. And I think counseling for us is a model that can fold into it a lot of these patristic insights. I don't know whether we've done enough with coming up with a genuinely psychotherapeutic technique in Orthodoxy, because I think we have the resources definitely to do it. So. Yes, Father Michael.
Yes, a couple of observations or / questions. It seems to me that the question of good anger kind of goes together with the whole discussion in the patristic tradition about the passions in general. Some writers, passions are just bad. Just bad, 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 bad. Others, no, the passions are natural gifts from God. And when we misuse them, they become very bad. So I think that's how I talk to people about anger.
Okay.
You know?
Let me just respond to that. I agree with that. I mean, if you look at, I love in Callistos Ware's Philokalia edition, he has that very nice glossary in the back, and he outlines this, because there are two approaches to the passions. One is they're all evil, root them out. The other is they're distorted good things, and then they become a problem. Okay, and that, I mean, I think I would agree with the latter position, So I would say, if you're asking me on a theoretical level, is there such a thing as good anger? I would say, yes, there is. The Lord manifested it, and certain other people manifested it. My problem is not to say that anger can be good. My question is knowing when we're expressing it for good, or when we're expressing it to cause more problems. I think anger, listen, when you have something like lust, for instance, this is a problem that is largely a more personal issue for most people than something like anger, which has all of these repercussions communally and interpersonally. It's a broader thing. So I guess my own reservation is that I don't know where I can speak in anger and feel perfectly comfortable doing it. That's my question. I would say this, however, and we'll get to this in the next talk tomorrow. One of the fathers say, there's always another way to deal with a just impulse that originally accompanies anger in you. There's always another way of dealing with this, and this is where we have to direct our energies. The evil, there might be a genuine evil that's tripping anger in you, but do you somehow fight that evil in an alternative way, or is it just the expression of anger in fighting it? You see? So visualizing another way is sometimes the way to go. You have to come up with an alternative to just using anger to combat something that makes you angry. Because often, you know this as well as I do, and I deal with this every day, you see something you don't like in a policy, in a moral stance, or whatever. If you angrily attack it, what does it do? It doesn't neutralize that negativity that I want to argue against. It only makes people dig in further. All right? It only makes people become more reactive in a way that is counterproductive, exactly the opposite of what you want to affect. But there are other ways of doing it.
Well, that leads into my second point, which is the whole ascetical goal of dispassion, wherein we don't stop feeling things, but there's a control, there's a distance, there's a perspective where we can be angry,
but sin not.
But the anger motivates us,
yes,
to move, to correct, to seek justice.
That I agree totally with.
Yeah.
And the last talk, I'm going to talk about a couple modern works that talk about this. One of my college philosophy professors, Martha Nussbaum, I don't know whether you heard her, she's a classicist, and she makes this very point, that we have to be able to distinguish between causes that need to be defended. They originally cause us to be angry. We recognize something evil in them, but how to do it? And this is what the question is. Dispassion is wonderful. I wish I experienced it. But to have the passions rise up against us, you know, it's like you put your hand on a burner, and if you burn it, you withdraw your hand. You feel the pain, all right? I think passions sometimes are an indication that something's wrong. And then the question becomes, what do you do with that insight? And if dispassion enables you to deal with it in a way where you're not controlled by the initial passion, if I do nothing but scream because my hand has been burned, rather than going and get help for the hand and putting salve on it and getting, then it's not helpful. So I think the dispassion enables us to see this flag that's gone up, the warning sign, and then begin to look at the approach to resolving the situation in a positive way. But I think, isn't it true that in pop psychology, correct me if I'm wrong, that most of us were brought up on the idea, if you're angry, show it. Because if you don't show your anger, it's going to get bottled up inside you and then you're going to become an axe murderer or something. All right? I wonder whether that's always true. Sometimes the initial expression of anger is not a healthy and productive thing. Father.
Father George, I think I get part of the answer, but I will also share with you. The person without anger, does that mean he's a careless person or passive? And how we can understand the words of Saint Elijah when he said, I have been very jealous for Jehovah, the God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant.
So. Okay, very good. You know, this answer is given in English. You know, the word in Greek, apatheia, all right, means passionlessness or, you know, being freed from passion, dispassion. What do we usually, what do bad translators translate apatheia as? Which it is not. All right? This is my answer to the question. It is not good to be apathetic in the sense of, pardon my French here, I don't give a damn. You know, that's someone else's problem, not mine. We want to have those feelings that warn us that something isn't right. But if we're controlled by it, what we need is apatheia, this ability to free ourselves from the passion, which otherwise would control us to do things that are usually stupid and counterproductive. So it's a good question you bring up. Now, someone like Elijah, in saying this, I've been very jealous for the Lord. All right? This sort of thing, I think, is a good testimony to correct passion. But in expressing this, he told the people, he's preaching in a way that makes them understand how I think you're doing something wrong in being unfaithful to the Lord. But notice that these are his words, all right, and not the prophetic words attributed to God. We all do that, right? We know what makes us angry. We think that there's an injustice involved. We have to face that injustice. That we can do. We can talk about being angry. I just am a little bit nervous when we attribute what we say in our anger to God's mind. That makes me uneasy. So, what did you think of Father Freeman's article? I'm curious. I feel like I'm in my person. Did you read it? Like I'm asking my students.
I think it was a curious.
Yeah. Do you agree with him that he says, you know, the pretense of the pretext of this is to scold those Catholic priests who are not angry enough about the child abuse cases. All right? We can all understand that. No one's going to say that doesn't give rise to a just anger in us when we read about them. But I think his reservation is, he says, the clergy don't get angry enough. And what does he say? Some of the angriest people I've known in my lifetime have been clergy. Anger does not seem to be, absent among the clergy. But he says, people, to feel moral outrage is a good thing. But he says at the end of the article, my experience is that what progress has been made within the heart of my native culture has been made through mercy and the appeal to kindness and compassion. To a large extent, I believe the same is true in the modern struggle with the rights of the unborn. It is the continued appeal to the humanity and to society's compassion that has gradually moved hearts toward their protection. By the way, I have to tell you, I remember when I was in college and the whole Roe v. Wade thing happened. I mean, there was such an outcry in favor of Roe v. Wade. Among my students now, and this is at a secular college, non-religious college, it's not there. It's not there anymore. And it's not there, not because people are condemning Roe v. Wade and abortion and all that stuff, which would be objectively the right thing to do, but because of what he says here, the appeal to compassion, the giving rise and encouraging of passion, compassion feeling toward the unborn, and to the women who feel, you know, tempted to abort. This is what's led to a totally different view among my students. I did an informal poll, private poll, in a class of 50 people. Everyone said that they were pro-life. Now, they didn't necessarily want their legal right taken away, but they had no desire to defend abortion as an alternative. But they said they don't buy into it. But the idea is, I think most of them came to this idea through compassion, all right? It will easily give way to those whose experience has been the other than mine. I can only bear witness in my own heart in the end, and this I have to agree with as well. There I find that in the mercy of God, I'm able to love, to forgive, to do justice, and defend the defenseless. There may be a good anger, but in the midst of the sea of anger in which we now dwell, it is hard to find. And that last sentence, that's really my fear. I mean, we live in a raging, I forget which canon it is. I think it's a canon of forgiveness in tone 6, the raging flood of the temptations. The raging flood, the raging sea of the temptations these days, I think is largely a sea of anger. And we are manipulated day in and day out by I'm not going to get into politics here at all. Whatever side you're on, you know, both sides are becoming masters at stoking anger. and hoping to further their political cause that way. We are all manipulated in that way, and I think that's very dangerous, and I will not allow myself to be manipulated that way. My doctor tested my blood pressure. He said, "You're doing all right, but you're not allowed to watch the news anymore." And so I don't. And I'm fine. I'm fine. But I mean, this is what we have to do. We're all the targets of this manipulative program of anger stoking. I think that's really dangerous. And we'll get into this tomorrow. I think some of the therapeutic techniques that the fathers advance are just really right on target. And they intermesh very nicely with counseling techniques that we're all familiar with. So we can look at that tomorrow. And I'm not going to finish too early. Your father will give me the malocchio, the evil eye. Any other questions or comments?
Are you going to talk about
physiology? No, I'm not. I am not capable of doing that. By the way, we think of anger now in terms of our heart, blood pressure, and so forth. You know what the ancients thought that anger, you could tell anger physiologically? The kidneys. And that's why we have these translations of God who knows the reins and the bowels. Reins, res in French, is just kidneys. So there were physiological tendons to it, you know? I can feel sometime if I disobey my doctor and watch the news, I can feel my heartbeat going. I said, time to switch the channel. Watch Nick at Night. There's nothing really bad on that channel. Yes, Father John.
You're forcing me to think about things that I haven't.
Is that good or bad? Are you angry about that?
Really, that really upsets me.
By the way, I was walking down, and someone, I don't know who it was, shouted out of the window, "I'm really angry about these lectures." And then they drew back into the window, so I don't know who it was.
So I'm just thinking off the cuff here and thought I'd share this, and I don't know if it would help or not. But in law, there's a difference in judgment between premeditated murder and manslaughter. And it seems that, a premeditated murder is judged from, this is coming from a person's heart, and they planned it out, and they executed the plan, whereas manslaughter may have been something that was, accomplished on a spur of a moment that, and that's anger and that's anger, but it's, at least in the court of law, it would be judged as two different kinds of anger. And so, in thinking about that, I'm wondering if there's such a thing as, well, we know that there's such a thing as anger that proceeds from the heart. But is there a kind of anger, and maybe that's not the best word, that sort of forces us to act when we see some type of wrong or some type of injustice that's not really proceeding from the heart, but is an act of the will in conformance with the will of God?
This is an excellent point. And if it ties into what I said in the first talk. We were talking about the classical distinction between orgy and thymos. What you're talking about, the kind of anger in the spur of the moment, in a fit of passion, you might do something that you can be blamed for manslaughter. That's thymos. The orgy is the more weighed anger, the more examined anger. I think that that's a very just, I think the law is right to make that distinction. I think the classical language made the distinction, but I'm not so sure that we always make that distinction. And I think for us, what we do sometime, I don't think any of us would condemn someone who has an involuntary, spontaneous surge of anger when they see something wrong. That makes us good human beings. But I think we wouldn't condemn people for that. But what we condemn people for is cultivating anger, letting its roots sink deeper, pruning the branches so it grows stronger, and then plotting to establish our anger through revenge. That's, I think, the murder rather than the manslaughter. But it's a valid distinction. I think theologically it's a distinction, and even pastorally it's a distinction that makes sense.
Or even breeding anger.
Yes.
It's not really a question or a statement. It's really that we going forward with your other lectures pastorally, you know, we're dealing in an era where there are so many rampant suicides, which is not something we are untouched by in our, with our families. In Southern California, there's a mega church with many many pastors, one of which committed suicide, and they suddenly had to address this in their community. This is a community that does not have an image of the cross and does not want to have an image of the cross, but is very much in content Christian, speaking from the Bible point of view, the mission of Christ, and so forth. It's obviously no theology of suffering, but that person obviously publicly was being recognized as having had mental disorders and so forth. We're dealing with this more commonly, as well as those that are victims of being abused, having faced and carrying that with them, of which sometimes we don't see or hear in a confession, in knowing what's the underlying issue, which is often related to anger.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the old distinction between confession and counseling always has to be kept in mind. Sometimes I will have confessions, very often, I don't know, do you have this experience where anger comes up very frequently in confession? Sometimes with surprising regularity, and it's sort of free-floating anger. It's directed at anything or anyone that gets in the way. And sometimes I've been tempted, I mean, confession is confession. People are confessing something they think is wrong, that they are at fault for. You forgive them and counsel them. But I've often said to people, I need to talk to you. Can we talk about this at some point outside of confession? I would say in a good 40% of the time, they agree to it. And if it comes up again, I'll make the offer again. Sometimes the idea has to grow on the person. But I do think that anger unattended, anger untreated, can lead to all kinds of destructive behaviors, either self-destructive, hence the suicides, or other destructive, the violence that's everywhere. I just left Carlisle 2 days ago. There's a 24-year-old kid from Carlisle who was living in Tennessee, and in a robbery, he was a very talented musician. One of the secretaries I know, her son was good friends with him in band, you know, they were both musicians. And he was shot and killed, you know, in Tennessee behind the Walmart. And, you know, you look at this sort of thing, and the police said, we don't have any motive for this except it's a senseless act of angry violence. So the anger, unattended, untreated, is going to lead to self-destruction and other destruction. There were four kids, as I understand it. I read the press release in the Tennessean. I never knew such a thing existed. The Tennessean, there were four kids, two young men, two women, and people saw the group, and they took them in custody in a Walmart, and they basically confessed to it.
One of them was 12.
Oh, my God.
12
years old, yeah. Isn't it? I was reading that, I'm thinking, you know, there must be, you know, what do you think? Oh, there must be more to the story. But now I say, maybe there wasn't more to the story. Just anger out of control and directed to the others. I'm telling you, this is a big issue. For the young brethren among us, I'm glad I'm not 25 and starting out on this, because I think if you're dealing with individuals and communities as a pastor, this is going to become a more and more and more common thing that you're going to have to focus, and that's in your community. I never find myself more angry in myself than when I'm dealing with anger in my community. It kicks up the anger in me. So as I said at the first talk, believe me, I don't have answers to this. I'm searching for them, and I do believe that this whole invitation to be with you has enabled me to spend the time and the effort to get my refined thinking on this, because otherwise it wasn't very refined. So. Thank you for the discussions outside of class, and we'll do that. Thank you.